Welcome one and all to the Stock Up Podcast, your one-stop shop for stocking up on the information you need to qualify for the Pro Tour. As always, my name is Alex. I am joined today by my co-host, Jacob Negro. Jacob, how are you doing?
Good. How are you doing, Alex?
I'm good, you know? Only a few technical difficulties this time,
yeah.
Which usually we have roughly zero, so I'm not bothered by it.
Yeah. That's fair.
There was an arena open this weekend. How'd you do?
I probably gave it four, maybe five attempts and didn't day two and then stopped trying.
No, fair enough.
My pools on average were a lot worse than my arena directs too. But
yeah. I never give up. It's a little absurd sometimes how many runs I'll do. To the point that's kind of embarrassing, but this time I also was almost about to give up. I think I was on maybe five or four or six or something, and I got a really busted pool and played in a day two.
Nice.
And when I played day two, the first draft, I drafted a red-white aggro deck that was pretty above average. I had two kind of on-plan rares. I had the three-mana warship.
Nice.
Spacecraft and
yep,
the two strong. Mana the two mana spacecraft that's white
one.
Yep, the anthem thing,
that's cool.
So I went 4-0, which is huge because it means you can lose, well, so stated it means you can lose twice instead of only once. And so the next draft, I started by picking Weft Walking,
okay,
the blue mythic.
Yep.
And then I took the colorless uncommon lander guy.
Great.
Makes a lander. And then I took a couple good green cards. So I was like, oh, great, I'm going to be blue-green. And the whole pack, first pack, went great. I just had all blue and green cards pretty much. And then packs two and three, literally the only colors I saw were Mardu.
Yeah, I had a similar draft recently. Just a normal arena draft. But yeah, I had a very unbelievable draft too. That was very similar where I was like white-green all the way through pack one. Pick four, pack two, there's like a Weft Walking that like I can't possibly take. I'm like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Pick five, there's the colorless land that makes robots. I take that. I'm like, awesome. But why is this like fifth pick? Pick six and seven, mutinous massacre, like mutiny or whatever. Not taking either of them. And then after I pass both of those, just only good red and black cards the rest of the draft. And I'm like, oh. I guess I was supposed to pivot into the two colors I hadn't drafted a single card of.
That's what I thought. I kept thinking back. I was like, was I really supposed to switch? There's no way, right? There was multiple times where I got like fifth and sixth pick, like double white pip rare and double black pip rare once.
Yeah.
It was just like, ugh, this is a disaster. So I ended up with this really terrible deck with like way too many five drops. And I'm playing 19 land. Because I don't have very many good cards, and I need lots of land drops. But I have Weft Walking. Oh, one of the other cards I got in pack one was the Crater Hoof Behemoth type creature. That's his name.
Oh yeah, Glacier Godma.
Yeah, Godma. So like I could win games in theory. I just deck was really bad, so I lose two right away.
Great.
And I'm like, yeah, I mean that deck was really bad. I'm not surprised. And right in front of me on the screen it says, since you won four, this is double elimination. I'm like, yeah, okay. But then highlighted, it says I can hit play again, and it says two games remaining. I'm like, there's no way. So I click it, and I'm like, it's not going to work, and it throws me in another game. And this is after I complained to Jacob, by the way, on Discord, because as soon as I lost.
You just get to play four games, right?
I guess, but the thing in front of me said this is double elimination, so if you which I assume means if you lose twice,
gotcha,
you're out. And I thought that's how it was, too, in the past. Because I thought when you, if you don't get four wins, then it's only it's single elimination for the second draft.
Well, I know the way the first draft works is you can play four games. So, like, even if you go 0-3, you can play the fourth game to try to win a little bit more gems.
Okay.
So maybe it works the same way there. Did you win $500?
I did.
Okay, nice. That's one, two more. Yeah, that sounds like it's intended, actually. It just sounds like I didn't phrase it correctly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I guess
I think
not.
You just get to play four
games.
And
it's been a long time since I played in the day two of an arena open.
Yeah.
So
that adds up. If you 4-0 the first one, I think they just let you play four games. And if you 3-1 the first draft, they only let you play three games or something like that.
Gotcha. Yeah, so I felt so silly because I complained to Jacob that I was out. And then I played two really hard-fought games. You know, I was like, oh, I'll just try to pull myself together. There's money on the line.
Yeah.
and I played against other decks that weren't very good. And
yeah, good job.
Each game went to three, and yeah, so pretty happy about that.
Yeah, I think the last time I did Tuden Open was it was Aether Drift, which I was pretty good at Aether Drift. I played a ton of it, and I think I 3-1'd the first draft and like 1-2'd the second draft with just like a really bad black-white deck that also felt like my games were just like getting mana screwed and things like that. And like it was like, yeah. I didn't think my deck was very good, and then I lost to decks that I also didn't think were very good due to just like normal limited mana problems, and that made it extra upsetting. Because if I just lost to like some good cards, I would have been like, yep, that makes sense. But
funny, you know, oddly enough, I have not drafted a game of Aether Drift. I, even though I've drafted basically every set
around
that's
it.
Come out in the last several years, just because I was moving at the time and I was really busy and it didn't seem that interesting, so I just didn't bother.
Yeah, it wasn't very popular, it seemed like, among players. I have no idea what the stats were. I felt like it was kind of marketed wrong, because part of why I enjoyed it is, you know, I played a lot during like that year. That was my first year on the Pro Tour, was Kaladesh and Amonkhet, and those are the planes of Aether Drift, you know? So like, like it kind of had a little bit of a nostalgia for that year, but it's marketed as like a race car set, which is not something I care about, or many people I talk to seem to care about at all. And it's just kind of funny, because also like in that set, like the mechanics, like the vehicles and the speed were not really like the good things to be doing for the most part either.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm not a huge, I've just never been a huge like vehicle fan, and the theme and everything.
The vehicles in that set were not very good. I mean, it reminds me of a lot of the same problems the spacecrafts have in this set, where like there are some good ones, but like you just can't put a bunch of vehicles or a bunch of spacecrafts in your deck, and then because there are some good ones, you're like reserving the space for those for only good ones. So you never draft the bad ones.
Yeah, I would say on average they're more underwhelming than not, although I think they play out more fun than vehicles. I like them a bit more. Maybe it's just because they're new, but
they have pretty interesting like the games that it really matters whether you are stationing them or not.
Yeah, exactly. There's like there's more decision making since you have to do it at sorcery speed and all
that. Or like, do I want to deal 3 damage to my opponent or have 3 charge counters on my thing? And like, it's actually a pretty important decision.
Okay, well, for today's episode, we're going to be talking about Standard. Just a pivot. We've I know there's a lot of hubbub about whether Standard needs an emergency ban, so I wanted to find out myself. I was playing a bit of Standard, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. I want to remind everyone that you can find us over on patreon.com/StockUpPodcast. I want to thank everyone who's joined already. We've got one tier at the moment. That'll probably be changing soon, but at the moment, if you want to get in, it's just $1 a month. You get access to everything we do over there, so definitely check it out. And of course, we're on YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
Yeah, and if you subscribe to us on Patreon, a few of you already reached out. Don't be scared to DM us for a Discord link, either in Patreon or if you know us, because I think I'm doing a poor job of getting that link set up properly, and it keeps expiring. So I'll see if there's a way to keep it permanent. Permanent.
Yeah. I don't even know how to do it, so
yeah, I'll do more research.
Figure that out. Yeah, I was messaging with a couple people in the Discord today, but so that's
great.
That's been fun. Yeah,
yeah,
we were talking about Demir and Pixie. So, so we can get into it today. So I actually, you know, because I was doing the Arena Open and I was trying to catch up on draft practice last week, I haven't played a ton of Standard, Jacob, but I've been meandering through things and figured we could just talk about the different decks in Standard and whatnot, some of the control decks I've been playing. And I think your tournament is this weekend, or is it the next one?
So I'm just going to a 20K RCQ in Phoenix. I'm not going to the Spotlight Series in Orlando.
Okay, you changed your mind?
No, I was not. This was always my plan.
I see. All right.
Yeah.
I'm just
driving
listening
to Phoenix.
That's fine.
Not that far.
Cool.
And visiting some friends. Yeah. So I'll say it outright. I'm planning on playing Izzet Cauldron. There's no way I'm going to switch, just because I'm not that invested in Standard, to be honest, right now, with the PT also coming up. I'm playing a lot of Draft and Modern. But so I'm just kind of shortcutting and playing what seems to be kind of the tier zero deck of the format.
Yeah, I mean, the TLDR of my limited practice is that the more I play, the more I think Cauldron has a pretty strong grip on the number one seat, so to speak. It's quite good. You can definitely build your deck to beat it, but you have to go pretty far out of your way, and then you get pretty messed up by some of the other decks in the format if you do that. It's been my experience.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. And then also, you know, I mean, the Cauldron deck is an aggro deck, and especially since they've banned these mice cards, it's kind of just one of the faster decks in the format generally.
Yeah, even without the Cauldron shenanigans.
So it's hard to beat it with some plan of like going under it or anything like that. You know, you kind of have to answer all of its annoying permanents, which come in various forms. You know, like they have creatures that hit you really hard, like Mako and Fear of Missing Out, and they have profs, which makes everything hit hard. And then, you know, they also have some card advantage, and then the Cauldron VV angle of the deck. Obviously, like, it has a ton of support to enable this Cauldron VV part of the deck, but it also, like, doesn't have to do that to beat you at all.
Right, yeah. Profed there, we've talked about it before, being one of the secret all-stars, I think.
Yeah, and just, like, the fact that it has all this looting and rummaging also means that, like, you know, watching people play and playing it myself, like, they discard Cauldrons to these cards all the time, you know, because that card really is only... They're basically built now that card only really matters if they get a VV in their graveyard, but even that is not really that bad for them because they just discard the Cauldrons.
Yeah, totally. And then... there's always the threat that later in the game, if you are fighting an attrition game and then at some point you tap out or something, they can just land a Cauldron. And
yeah,
if there's
exactly.
a BB in the graveyard, you're in big trouble.
Yeah. From looking at, you know, the Arena Championship 9 deck lists, where there's 7 Cauldron decks in the top 8 and it was 54% of the field, so also a pretty good conversion rate. The kind of innovation I saw from a lot of players, because, you know, now that rotation happened and we've lost Thrill Seeker, people are kind of wondering what would be replacing that. And it seems like the answer has just been Steam Core Scholar, which is not a card that's synergistic with Cauldron, but just, you know, does the thing the deck wants to do. It's a really good card with profs, of course.
So you sent me a list. Is this the one? Is this going to be your starting point? Have you played at all with this deck yet?
Yeah, I've played just a few with this list, a few matches on Arena. I think I'm pretty likely to just play this, maybe a couple changes. A big idea I'm having to kind of hedge for more mirrors is actually to like exchange one of my main deck Torch the Towers with a sideboard Anul, which is something I've kind of hinted at before. But I think Torch the Tower, as far as the interaction goes, is actually kind of poor in mirrors. It's a little different now that they have Steam Core Scholar, because this deck's pretty bad at bargaining Torch, to be clear. It can do it, but it, you know, it's sacking a Fear of Missing Out or a Profs, not something it really wants to do. Those are really the only things it can sack, and or it can sack a Cauldron too. Not ideal. So you're not getting the 3 damage mode very much, and this deck has a lot of 3 toughness creatures. So I think Anul, you know, Anul also can hit Enduring Curiosity, which is one of the bigger reasons to play Torch anyways. So that's kind of nice.
Against Blue-Black. Because Blue-Black is... whether or not it's even good, it's definitely one of the, I guess it's the second most popular deck, just straight up. So
yeah, Blue-Black, you know, before rotation, people claimed it was good against Cauldron, which I can't even say that was true. I mean, I played it, I guess, in the qualifier weekend thinking that was true, but afterwards wasn't sure. But one of the best cards in that matchup was Fairy Mastermind, which rotated. So now I'm not even sure I would begin to claim that.
No, it doesn't seem that way. And I can't remember where I heard it, but someone was, I don't know if I saw some data that suggested that it was much better against Demir than the other way around, or someone I was following said it. I can't remember.
Surprising
but,
me at all. Also, like, aggressive creatures are really good into Kaido. Adding Steam Core Scholar, you know, that's just like a flying vigilance creature versus small flying deck also. So that's going to be like a hedge in that direction. The change from Go for the Throat to Shoot the Sheriff matters because this deck has Marauding Mako and Soulstone Sanctuary, both outlaws. There's just a lot of, you know, a bunch of small things shifting all towards the Cauldron player's favor, in my opinion. And that's from a matchup that was maybe favored previously.
Yeah, totally. So for our audio only listeners, this list is pretty just stock, except the cards that seem different to me. We've got 3 Steam Core Scholars, which you're saying a lot of people are playing now, which makes sense. A couple of Braid for the mirror match, and 1 Quantum Riddler.
Yeah, and then one Twin Moth Stormbrood, I guess, Twin is Moth another Stormbrood, removal sure. spell. Yeah, the Riddler, I can say, is probably not a hedge for the mirror. It's certainly more for these grindy cards, but it is just like a really solid, you know, card advantage spell. It also has a pretty, like, I guess unique's not the right word, as people find more and more ways to use Quantum Riddler. But with Tirsa and Fear missing out, when you discard and then draw cards, you can enable that one or less cards in hand text like a lot. But, you know, you can play a Tirsa with three cards in your hand and a Riddler in play and still get an extra card out of your Riddler.
Yeah, that's pretty strong. When I played in a standard RSQ a couple weeks back, some of the Izzet players there had Quantum Riddlers, and I watched some of the games, and it seemed pretty good.
Yeah, I've seen some Izzet Prowit lists. So I guess for reference, so the list I'm looking at is got third in the Arena Championship from JMM, who's Jan Moritz Merkel, who is a pretty accomplished player, and he actually won his first Pro Tour ever in 2006, but then after that kind of didn't do much else, but then has had one of the best performances of anybody in the online era of Magic. Looks like, you know, they used to be called split championships or sometimes arena championships. He is, this is his fifth top eight in that, in arena, you know, championships effectively. He has a win in that. He has a win in a Magic online showcase and has qualified for it a second time. Just an all-star player that, as far as I understand, you know, he's in Germany, I think. So I just don't think he'll travel to these U.S. Pro Tours. I don't know if he thinks it's not worth the money or just doesn't like traveling in general. But, you know, just a pure online player.
It's really hard to qualify for these online tournaments consistently. So that's impressive.
Yeah. And, I really trust his deck building. I know he worked with Daniel Goshal, who got second in this tournament, actually.
Okay. Were their lists, did they both play the same deck, or?
Not exactly. They had very similar things going on. Daniel is pretty well known for playing lots of four ofs. So instead of all these one ofs, like, he had four Scholar, he just had two Abrade, two Flood Maw, two Torches, two Roaring Furnace. His deck was all fours and twos, in fact, looking at it.
Gotcha.
Including his sideboard, which was 7 2 ofs and one Fire Magic. So similar, very similar 75s, but some of the orders of the cards, you know, because Jan has the sideboard fourth Scholar or things like that. 1-1 Riddler split. They're 75s. They're probably like 73 of the same cards looking at it. Few differences, but yeah.
It's funny. Whenever I build a deck, I usually start with thick numbers like that, but I always end up changing things around and tinkering. I feel like it usually works better to hedge in Magic rather than to play all four ofs, but I have seen decks where, or even certain players that love to play decks like that. It's pretty.
Yeah, this deck having a lot of digging and rummaging too. I feel like, you know, these one ofs can be pretty nice because they can be really high impact in certain matchups, but also you can kind of move and sift past them. Part of why I think like a main deck Anul could actually be kind of appropriate in this deck, especially because like Steam Core Scholar incentivizes you to have some instants and sorceries anyways. I guess there's kind of some tension there because Winter Night Stories wants you to have creatures. But yeah, I guess if anything, that makes a card like Roaring Furnace stick out to me as like the worst of all possible things here because it's not getting value off of either of those cards.
Right. Yeah, so for people who haven't played a ton of high competition standard, we're kind of in the spot where we were before the bans, funny enough, where you basically had to go all out and play as if you were pre-boarding against Izzet. Izzet.
Yeah.
But now Izzet Cauldron.
And yeah, it's possible that, you know, Standard will develop in a way similar to what we saw at the Pro Tour, where maybe there is a deck that preys upon this Cauldron deck. But like you said, it's not the best against other decks. So it might end up having really good win rates in tournaments. And the Cauldron decks, they're going to be hedging for each other. And they might start heading towards more like around a 50% win rate, but the reality is it's like just hard to really escape that paradigm of like,
yeah,
best deck that is just, its baseline is just so powerful. It's not, its bad matchups just can't be that bad, just from, you know, how powerful of a thing this deck does, in my opinion.
Totally. Yeah. And you know, every time we have a format like this, there's always one or two decks usually that does well that's not this deck or not the,
yeah,
you know, the main deck. But so if you were convinced that you had a good plan and a good deck, maybe you're playing blue-white control or some blue-black midrange or something, I could see playing it. And people have different motivations, of course, when they play Magic, different levels. Yeah. But this is definitely the baseline for the format.
And I'll add some more notes about this deck, I guess, that I watched on Twitch. Nathan Stoyer was streaming on the Ultimate Guard channel, and he was streaming playing kind of a blue-red prowess deck that he kind of was tuning for the Cauldron matchup. In fact, I think he main decked two Cauldrons himself. And then he was playing against Daniel, this guy that got second. This is after the tournament. Just getting some like 1v1 testing in, and it didn't really seem like, I don't know exactly how their set went, but it didn't seem like Nathan was very convinced. I don't know if that means he was losing or just, you know, more the fact that it's like, okay, maybe I'm a little ahead in this matchup, but like, I know I'm not going to play against only Cauldron the entire tournament if they're preparing for Orlando or something like that, I imagine.
Yeah, funny. That's been my experience with Blue White Control, where I get paired against Cauldron for the most, and you know, I'm just playing on the ladder, so it's not the best practice, but for the most part, I feel like I'm a little bit ahead, but I still don't really think, because I have problems in other matchups that, because I've made certain changes to be good against Cauldron, I'm lacking in other matchups, and I can definitely feel that. Plus, you know, Blue White Control has its pretty typical problems where you run into random things that people play, and sometimes you don't have the right answers that line up, that sort of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's the baseline. We're going to talk about some other decks in Standard at the moment. I'm going to pick your brain, Jib. Figure we'll go on to blue-black mid-range.
Okay.
And see if there's anything you think people are doing that wrong or that they should change. I've noticed people have started trying Sunset Saboteur. That's the one black card. One and a black 4/1 menace with ward, discard a card from the new set. Card seems pretty good.
So I have been impressed by what that card does, and it totally makes sense in the blue-black deck, but I think it has a major issue, and that's that all these red decks are boarding in fire magic against you. And that's just like a clean and efficient answer against this 4/1 with ward, discard a card. So
yeah,
really awkward spot to be in, because I recognize that card is actually being pretty powerful, but it's just like the best card in the whole format against it is fire magic, which is already a card people put in their sideboard for this deck.
Yeah, someone in Discord, I asked if he liked the Saboteur, and he said that exact same thing.
Yeah,
couldn't you maybe just play it like instead of Deep Cavern Bat or something, and so you still have the same number of one toughness things.
Yeah, I see lists with both. I mean, I think you have to play 4 Siren, 4 Drowner. I would maybe try to look to avoid X1s at like all cost after that. You could maybe look towards like the Azure Beastbinder comes to mind.
That does seem pretty strong. I mean, that seems like it might be good in the Cauldron matchup.
Yeah. I see a list that's doing exactly that. That got 6th in a challenge from Claudio. Exactly. The only one toughness creatures are the Drowner and Siren. I mean, the Drowner and Siren are just way too good with Kaido and Curiosity to not play. Deep Cavern Bat's not even like that good with Kaido. It's good with Curiosity. And, you know, the Beastbinder is unblockable, basic, not entirely, but effectively.
I kind of like Cecil. This deck I'm looking at only has one Cecil on TG Goldfish.
That card's fine. It's a good one drop, but it's legendary. It's hard to play a lot of copies of it. People seem to really be moving towards Preacher, I'm guessing, because they think it's a useful tool against Cauldron. Cecil's text is kind of awkward with Preacher, I guess, because both players losing life means like you're not making any progress on your Preacher drawing you cards.
Right.
Maybe that's good. Maybe it means you get both modes more often, actually.
Yeah.
I'm probably thinking more so. I know like
you Dark risk Hawk
and Preacher are actually like not really friends, for example, because you just
The worst case scenario is they have more life than you, and you're in a position where you need to draw cards. That comes up a decent amount, which the sale can lead to that. I just feel like it's a one mana play, and it kind of pulls its weight for that, and in a format where you're trying to really get on board right away, especially in this deck too.
I think a one mana play. Yeah, I think I played two. When I was playing Dimir pre-rotation, I think that's where I'd kind of aim. I mean, you don't want like too many one mana plays. I guess the one mana plays now are a little different too. You don't have cut down, and there's less reason to main deck duress, because previously, you know, the best deck in the format had Steel Cutter and Stock Up that you really need to hit. This deck, even though it has Cauldron and Profs, the window to hit those are pretty low. Whereas, you know, like the prowess deck is like continually putting cards into its hand over and over, so you duress would like almost never miss.
Right.
I see.
Yeah,
we've got Intimidation Tactics, which that's kind of more reasonable, but still it's going to have a falling off point. And then Tragic Trajectory is just going to be probably a lot worse than Cutdown was.
Yeah, the thing with this Izzet deck is it's actually playing to the board pretty quick. It's not just cantripping a bunch.
Yeah.
So the discard's not quite as good. Plus, you know, if they ever land, I mean, I guess ideally you're trying to nab the cauldron with these discard spells, but it's only two mana, so if any point they draw it and just sneak it into play, they're going to dump their whole hand. I mean, discard's pretty awkward. What about the removal and counter suites in this deck? It's kind of all over the place. I really don't know what's best. Stab. Pretty gross. Trajectory fits okay.
Yeah, I'd probably be looking at like certain quantities and weird splits. With like four Flood Pits Drowner already being some sort of interaction, I guess, yeah, like having like 10 counter spells / removal spells sounds about right to me on top of that. That cost, you know, two or one.
This person won a challenge with, see, two Tidebinder, two Phantom Interference, and then the rest is just like one stab, one into the Flood Maw, one Trajectory, two Bitter Triumph, two Shoot the Sheriff.
Yeah,
I guess that's what you kind of have to do, because none of the removal is that good.
Yeah, I mean, this is like a thing that keeps happening with black mid-range decks in other formats. I've made fun of people in Pioneer, like Rakdos decks, you'd see things similar to this, and it's like, is your deck really that good if you like just have to hope that your Doomblades are the right Doomblades when you draw them and you can't play four of the same one because people are just exploiting that in various ways?
Right, and it's not like this deck sees a lot of cards. It just plays with what it has, and then, I mean, once it's drawing cards, it's probably winning.
Yeah, like it does see a lot of cards and has an unchecked Kaido or Curiosity, but that stage of the game is kind of really favorable.
Is over. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so, I mean, that deck's not too attractive, honestly. Do you think there's any merit to just playing Izzet Press without the cauldrons? Seems like this deck is decently popular still.
Or I guess you mean, like, Izzet Prowess, not Izzet Cauldron?
Yeah, exactly, sure. Yeah.
I mean, there is, but I do think you should main deck one or two cauldrons in that deck. You're a VB deck yourself, so in any random matchup, you could still sort of assemble that. And, gotcha. Yeah, Nathan's list, didn't get it copied, but, you know, it had pretty normal things, but I think he had at least a couple Riddlers. I don't think I saw the Planispheres. He probably just cut those entirely for being kind of weak. He had main deck Rowls, which play a little bit better into the idea of maybe setting up your own cauldron, because that is, like, a way to draw and discard. So you can maybe develop a Rowl and pitch a VV, or like make an Otter and untap and pitch a VV and play a cauldron and kind of have a really strong turn still. But yeah, there's lots of Abrades right now is pretty important, I'm sure, for that matchup as well.
It does seem like maybe you could build this deck to be favored against cauldron if you just adapt sort of a control role.
Yeah,
I mean, you have the Abrades, you have the torches, so you can handle kind of the board, and then obviously you can take over with VV.
Yeah, you gotta be a little careful, I guess. You know, these cauldron lists I'm talking about in the 75, they've got four Scholars and two Riddlers and four Winter Night Stories and usually a sideboard Planeswalker and maybe Roaring Furnace, and then you know, they might get the Steaming Sauna online. They can definitely grind with you. And then also, you know, the fact that you're playing VV, you both are doing this thing against each other where, like, you're trying to hide your VV in your graveyard and make sure you don't get into your graveyard till you can exile it with your own cauldron.
And they just have more cauldrons.
That's kind of, your own vulnerability. And then things like Steaming Sauna or Roaring Furnace and Twin Moss Stormbrood can maybe answer a VV on, like, a one-turn window, too, and that can be kind of disastrous. Notably, I think Lithomantic Barrage was actually kind of useful against VV from a few decks, and that has rotated too. So VV's maybe just gotten a little stronger.
This Esper self-bounce deck still seems pretty popular, and every time I play against it, it seems really bad.
Yeah.
I feel like this deck needs a rework, honestly. Like, I don't like Cosmogrand Zenith. Like, it's kind of a powerful card, but I just don't think it lines up well in the format.
Yeah, that's just what they want to, like, use to pressure the game, because otherwise they're kind of just like a popper deck that plays a never-ending stream of two for ones but doesn't really do anything that actually, like, wins the game.
Yeah, since they lost there is a one black card that makes your opponent discard still, the Tiny Bones.
Tiny Bones joins up
or something.
So this comparison's awkward because Hopeless Nightmare isn't legal or anything, but this was a widely discussed card when Hopeless Nightmare was legal in many decks. And the comparison I always liked is it's like if Monstrous Rage only granted your creature a monster roll and didn't give +2 power. Like, the 2 life of Hopeless Nightmare was a huge deal. It was really the only reason it was good.
And that's fair, I guess.
Like,
yeah, because you'd rip apart your opponent's hand and then they'd be, you know, at a low enough life total for your 2/1s to actually kill them.
I also enjoyed, you know, I'm kind of a Thoughtseize hater, and I kind of enjoyed that Hopeless Nightmare was like a reverse Thoughtseize. Like, because sometimes I joke that Thoughtseize is like, it doesn't matter what card you take in some matchups, like, the game's just going to continue to a point that your opponent's going to sculpt their hand in a way that will be fine. So you're just like trading 1 mana for 0 of their mana and losing 2 life. And I feel like sometimes you're actively like lowering your win rate having Thoughtseize in certain matchups.
Oh, for sure. Sometimes
Hopeless Nightmare wasn't guilty of that, at least.
Sometimes people board in a lot of discard spells against. So from when I play a lot of control decks, sometimes people board in discard spells when I feel like they're not supposed to. Because what's happening is their deck's too assertive, and what they're actually doing is slowing the game down.
Yeah.
So even though they tear apart your hand, they're not providing, they're not doing nearly as much pressure, and you're still making land drops, and then you'll eventually draw cards to cast, and it ends up being more of a detriment than a positive.
Yeah, this is certainly a bit of a tangent, but I think Thoughtseize is a very like aggressive and combo-y card, and better suited a lot of times as a sideboard card too. Nowadays, it's just like, you don't want the game to go long if you're playing those types of cards. Because the thing that comes up with those cards too that people pretend doesn't happen is that you top deck them and they don't do anything.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
And if you're playing Thoughtseize to make the game go longer and not to just try to like... Like, the best possible play you can make with Thoughtseize is to take a card from your opponent's hand and then they don't have a play the next turn.
Right. Or you're taking cards where there aren't many replacements in their deck, and it's important to take this like specific type of card.
Yeah. I just think nowadays decks are really redundant, I guess, is what I would argue, and that doesn't happen very much.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. So let's see, what else have we got? So besides that, control decks are decently popular. I could talk about blue-white control now.
Yeah, that seems to be a direction that that's kind of the category of deck I don't disagree with you that like might be favored against Cauldron, but just has a lot of fundamental flaws. And, you know, we talked about Dimir being popular. I imagine Kaido is one of those fundamental flaws.
It's rough, yeah. It's one of those things where you could definitely build your deck to beat Dimir, but a lot of the cards you want for Dimir you don't really want against Cauldron. So I've settled on this list for now, but you know, I'm in no way set on it. So I don't have Pinnacle Stargate. I'm instead playing Ultima. Ultima is decent against blue-black and the format in general. And then it, against Cauldron, obviously, it could hit the Cauldron. And also, it hits the 3-mana creatures, which is pretty important. I was noticing with the Star Cage that when you... one of the ways your opponent could play around it was just jamming 3-mana creatures onto a board where they already had lots of things that you needed to Star Cage, and that could be pretty awkward. And I've been really happy with Seam Rip, so I've just got 4 of those.
That instead. Sounds way better to me.
Yeah.
I mean, also, the format's just loaded with Abrade. The Cauldron deck is now playing usually 2 Abrade, 3 Into the Flood Maw. So, like, you know, I know they can Into the Flood Maw Seam Rip, but that's going to be way less of, like, an immediate blowout towards your plan. Only 1 of your mana and 3 of your mana.
Right.
And, yeah. and you can always get Star Cage dead against your deck, too.
Yeah, exactly. So that's nice. Not sure what else to talk about here. Everything's pretty standard, to be honest. I've got 4 consults. I think that's, and only 2 stock ups. I think consult is slightly better in this deck. You're playing it at speed a decent amount. The win conditions, a little torn on these. There's not great ones. I like Elspeth is the most solid one, but you can't play too many copies of those, especially since I'm playing Ultimas. So I've got a mix of sort of just all the creatures, Overlord, Beza, Meringue, and Elspeth.
Yeah, in blue-white, I also think it matters a little less. I could see having less win cons than what you're presenting here, just because you have these fountain ports and restless anchorages. I'm not saying you should play zero like spells that can win, but you might be able to take a couple of them out, honestly, for more 2-for-1s or something.
Yeah, the thing is they're kind of like Overlord. White Overlord's one of your best cards against blue-black.
Yep.
So that's kind of nice to have. Beza's kind of the only source of life gain in the deck, so that's kind of nice to have still. And Beza's just a really strong card. And then same is kind of true for Meringue. You know, like I could cut the Meringues for stock ups, and that would probably be reasonable. But sometimes playing the 6-mana Meringue River Region is pretty strong.
Yeah, Meringue was, I guess, one of the ones I would probably keep. But yeah, it's hard. I agree with what you said. Like you kind of need all of this, but
Then also it's like, what else am I going to play? Just more cancels? I don't know. Those aren't super great.
No, I guess I would consider like stock up being kind of in the category of a win condition, where like obviously it's not going to win, but it's like the card you use to actually pull ahead so you can stabilize, and then hopefully very threat light and your lands can actually cover like closing the game. I mean, Fountain Port way more than Restless Anchorage. Restless Anchorage, I'm sure, dies to removal all the time.
Yeah, funny enough, Restless Anchorage is how is how the games end in the blue-white control mirror a lot.
Sure.
But that's a whole other thing. I thought when I played Atharskew, I had 3 stock ups and 3 Bezos and no overlords. Gotcha. All my overlords were in the sideboard, so you could do something like that. I'm not sure the right numbers, basically. I made the change of Refute over 3 steps ahead. I've been pretty happy with that. I mean, I just never kick 3 steps ahead ever.
Sure, unless so I'm you just want a little bit super more way ahead.
Yeah, okay. So I think. I honestly think that one's kind of a no-brainer, especially in this deck. Maybe in decks where you leave up your more mana more often. But a lot of the time you're playing something in this deck and then leaving up a few mana to counter. And then I also just sideboarded out in a lot of matchups too, so whatever.
Yeah, of course.
I hate Get Lost. I side that out when I can. It's just, I don't know, what you just kind of have to play it when you're just these colors.
Yeah, I know, right? It's just nothing...
Kaido, there's a few other things it's good against. Sometimes you can clean it up with Ultima, but yeah, there are certainly games where you've drawn too many Get Lost and you don't have, and the game's kind of a grindier game and the maps are a big deal.
Yeah. So I saw a great quote recently that I think is actually old, probably from the era of when Mono Red and Gruul Mice were kind of the top decks around PT Aetherdrift, but it was from Tristan, and it was Get Lost is like Christmas, and that that's pretty appropriate to how it felt, especially as a mouse deck, but just in general, it doesn't really ever feel bad when your card gets Get Losted, which is not a sign of strength for the card.
Yeah, it's funny, this deck doesn't mind playing against Get Lost either, because a lot of times you have fountain port in place, or you're just
Okay, I'll draw some cards. You play Elspeth, you make 2 tokens, they get lost immediately.
Yeah,
you say, I guess, I mean, that's what it's like, right? It feels like Christmas. You just have so many little presents in play.
Rough. Yeah. Kaito. There's a few things that you feel like you have to have it, but it's not great. I've been trying these 2 Parting Gusts, and they've actually been pretty good.
Interesting to see them in straight blue-white. I've seen people Parting Gust their own Shiko a few times in Jeskai.
Okay.
And then obviously they're not playing it just for that, but it makes it a bit more modal.
Yeah, I do definitely target my creatures in certain matchups sometimes. Yeah. It comes up. Mostly I'm just, exiling enduring creatures or something really important. And giving them a fish is most of the time not a big deal. So I've been pretty happy with that card. Obviously, I wouldn't want to play too many. Really want Hollowed Fountain, though, let me tell you.
Yeah, I'm sure that can open up some dramatic changes, though it'll probably come alongside Steam Vents, so other decks might catch up.
At that Arsecu, I had mana problems a lot, and they only really cost me in one game of the final match playing for top 4, but it definitely cost me where I didn't have double white.
Yeah,
you know, I've since added like a Temple of Enlightenment. I'm not very happy about it.
That's but a
there it is.
Secret Standard one that I've played more than probably most people as well. Mostly, and I've added it to my Omniscience decks at times.
Okay, yeah.
But at some point I wondered if it was actually better than a one-color Surveil Lands in Omniscience specifically. Obviously, in your deck, that's not the case. Yeah, but
right. It might be worse than, like, Sunken Citadel. I have tried that card in the past.
Oh, yeah. That sounds kind of nice.
Yeah, I thought so too, but it just doesn't matter as much as you would think.
Yeah, I've played with it and it didn't come up as much as I thought, including in the white deck, but...
Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It's not like Temple Enlightenment, some amazing card. So, notably, I have a lot of creatures in the sideboard, so in the control mirror is basically where Enduring Curiosity is for. But sure. I actually board in Voice of Victory and the Overlords against blue-black, and I'll often take out sweepers and just turn into kind of a tap-out deck against them. That can work pretty well.
That makes sense. Yeah, I've seen some people playing blue-black on random streams, and I see their blue-white opponents often have Voice of Victory and play against them post-board, so I'm guessing some people are a little bit more heads-up about leaving in removal for it. That being said, it's not that bad against removal either.
No, because it's only two mana, and then sometimes if you don't draw it and they have removal, that would be totally fine, especially if they leave in small creature removal.
Yeah, we talked about this before, but it's like, it's a trade of two mana for two mana. There's not really like cut down or anything killing it for one mana anymore, and I don't think Torch the Tower decks are what you're bringing them in against. And then, like, if they pass with that two mana removal spell and you play Voice and they don't have a counter spell, then it's actually trading for more than two of their mana.
Yeah. Totally.
Because they're wasting two mana. Or like they, even if they pass a Flood Pits Drowner, like they have to Drowner in response and you just play the 1/3, so still a victory.
Speaking of how much I've liked Voice of Victory, I sort of almost because of that card, I wanted to build try like mono white adjacent, but not actually mono white. I wanted to try splashing some colors. This first deck I have here, I tried a black white deck, so it's kind of like the old mono white deck where you're trying to get card advantage with Carrot Cake and Enduring Innocence and play Elspeth and Overlords and stuff. But I decided to try some one drops, went with Cecil, Sephiroth, obviously good with all those tokens, and mostly just stay white. The mana in Orzhov is really good.
Yeah, I've considered, I guess, the opposite of playing black and splashing Voice of Victory, but I guess these double weight cards are pretty important too, so that makes sense.
Yeah, I had the idea of in certain matchups you turn back into, because that mono white deck had some good matchups where it was kind of like this controlling inevitability deck against smaller mid-range decks, so I kind of wanted to emulate that a little bit. And
yeah, that was a deck I played really early after rotation, and I thought, hey, like Seam Rip can give me an answer to Cauldron, which is pretty unique. And they lost Thrill Seeker, which if there was ever a matchup where Thrill Seeker was important, it was probably this one. But it still just felt really behind versus Cauldron, just because, you know, you don't have a lot of card selection yourself. And the Seam Rip is still a sorcery speed answer to Cauldron, and sometimes that's too slow.
Yeah, and I mostly ran into those sorts of problems. So then I tried... because Shahar Shenhar on YouTube was playing a blue-white control deck, basically, where he was splashing Inevitable Defeat.
A Jeskai control deck, splashing it. Yeah.
Yeah, Jeskai control deck, yeah. And I'll put this graphic on the YouTube as well, but this is basically just an all-instant speed deck. Yep. Jeskai control, no Shiko. He's winning with Jeskai Revelation, and of course, he's got four Lightning Helix and four Inevitable Defeats, which can burn them out. He's got a lot of counter spells. He's got four Consult the Star charts. This deck looks a little silly, but when you watch him play it, it's actually pretty good against a lot of the things in the format. I don't know how good. I haven't played it at all myself. But Inevitable Defeat is the sort of card that... One of the things that's going on in this format is everyone has these very hard-to-answer permanents, and each deck has a different type. Like, Blue-Black has Kaito and the Enduring Creature, and Izzet has Cauldron and the two mana, but the Profs, and so Inevitable Defeat is one of the only cards in the format that can answer everything.
Yeah, that makes sense. Jeskai Revelation is a card that I played one of last time I played Jeskai, and it is like a very clunky card, so at first seeing three is surprising, but the fact that he's not playing sorceries, he's not playing Shiko or Beza, it seems a little bit more acceptable. Obviously, it's at a much higher spot in the curve than those cards, but you kind of have more leeway when your whole deck is kind of instant speed here. You're going to be able to kind of set up hitting your land drops with consults and things like that a little better, I imagine.
Yeah. So I'm definitely going to be trying this deck. It looks fun, but I was mostly just Shahar had several hours of video on it, so I just watched him play, basically, instead of playing myself.
Yeah.
I could watch it at 2x speed even, too, so that was nice.
Yeah. On that note... watching high-level players play is a really great way to improve. And in fact, part of my prep for my weekend with Cauldron, I'm only kind of in the first match, like on pause when I switched to it, but is watching the arena championships more thoroughly, especially because they're showing how these players are sideboarding.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty nice.
So,
especially if you're going to be playing, is it
a lot of mirrors?
You need to get that mirror down. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
So that's probably a good idea for people who are have tournaments this weekend or the next, and they're going to play. Is it? It's funny from my perspective. Shahar sort of fell off the face of the earth, and I just have now seen him come back and make some videos again.
Yeah.
Is that kind of what happened?
Yeah, as far as I can tell, this is pretty recent that he started streaming again, but. He's okay. Got a great stream title to get a lot of attention. You know, he is a 2-time world champ, so.
Yeah. And he's still got it. Yeah, he was playing. He's really good.
Yeah, I'll say the decks he plays, I'm a little skeptical of very often.
Oh, sure.
But he's watching him play, he is one of the best players in the world still. Like, him actually navigating his games is very impressive.
Yeah, and he does it so nonchalantly, too, where he just easily understands everything that's going on, you can tell.
Yeah.
But yeah, obviously he's, I think, angling towards making his content interesting, which is totally fair.
Yeah, and you know, also, when you just play a ton of arena only, that's like going to warp to some extent what happens. Because we've both talked about this, even in High Mythic, in Standard. You know, I think his control deck is a little clunky, for example, but all the control decks I play against seem clunky to me. And so if he wants to win these control mirrors, he probably has to kind of raise his curve a little bit more than I'm willing to play.
Yeah, and play some extra... cancels,
yeah,
probably,
you know, yeah, like exactly. I don't like playing cancel because I think it's really bad against Dimir and Cauldron, for example. But it mm-hmm. you probably play way more control mirrors on arena than any other than in paper or in Magic Online or whatever serious event you're playing in. So you probably just need these cancels to kind of keep up.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's one of the reasons I have some in my main deck, my bullet control deck. I mean, counter spells in general are kind of by nature they're a catch-all, so it makes sense as a main deck. Prospect to have some in your control deck, but yeah
of course it's just a world of difference between No More Lies and a 3-mana cancel
for sure. But because he brought to attention the inevitable defeat to my mind, I tried just throwing red, since Mardu mana's pretty good through red in the Orzhov
deck. Mardu
mana
is very good,
and this deck I've only played maybe 4 games with, so
gotcha,
not a lot of info. It's been okay. I got stomped half of my games, so I guess 2, maybe 3, I can't remember, by the green deck with like 4 greater power synergies. And that seems like a really rough matchup, so didn't like that about this deck, but
that makes sense. Yeah,
nothing much else to report.
I guess once again, this is more on kind of the black sack theme. You know, I had mentioned the Mardu mana the same way you have. And the kind of unique part about the Mardu mana is that the white red verge and the black red verge are both like red second. So it seems like it could be pretty reliable at producing red mana later in the game rather than on the first few turns. So a card like Inevitable Defeat makes a lot of sense as a splash in that color combo. If you're more aggressive, a card I saw that kind of impressed me was Warleader's Call, which is the Glorious Anthem, but also says things ping.
Right.
Which is just an amazing card with Voice of Victory. If you
totally.
Voice into that, you're attacking and dealing 8 damage that turn, which is pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you'd have to change this deck around. That'd be a little bit different. This one, I decided to try a more controlling route with some Caretaker's Talents in the main, since I was going to have some more catch-all removal.
Yeah, sorry. To be clear, I was talking about like the sack, like taking a black-white sack deck and maybe splashing Warrior's Call.
Yeah, that might be good. The ones with all the creatures.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Just tons
and
of one
especially
drops,
like the creatures that die into 1/1s are also pretty good with an Anthem.
Yeah, I agree. And I toyed around with the idea of maybe playing Infestation, Sage of Sedasius Hill in even this deck too. So,
yeah,
this isn't by no means. I would say this is not a polished deck at all. This is just sort of an idea that I wanted to show people a bit. I guess for audio only listeners, this is I've literally just got 4 Carrot Cake, 4 Voice of Victory as my 2 drops. I've got some Sessiles as a 1 drop, and then I've got this 3 drop package of Sephiroth, Enduring Innocence, and Caretaker's Talent as card advantage, and then a couple Overlord of the Mistmoors, a couple Elspeth, and then 4 Inevitable Defeat, and then some 2 mana removal, a Braid, Shoot the Sheriff, Parting Gust.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Mardu is a great position for its mana. You know, I brought up Sultai Control and Urgent Necropsy, I think, a couple weeks ago to you. and that list was in the Arena Championships. I don't know how well it did.
I saw that.
There is an awkward part about Urgent Necropsy versus the Cauldron deck, and it's that they can exile your graveyard.
And they can pinpoint your six.
And like if you play a Rakshasa's Bargain or you somehow bin one of your dragons with Omen, which are kind of the expensive parts of the deck, they can kind of immediately tag that potentially. But you know, sometimes you play a Bargain and you bin a Morang River Regent, and then you might be able to untap and play a Necropsy.
I was playing an Aspire Control deck that I liked quite a bit. But of course, you nailed the problem. As soon as I started playing against Is It a Lot, it's a pretty bad win condition to try to tap out and mill half their deck for one turn, because they really can just kill you when you do that the next turn.
Absolutely. Especially that late in the game.
Yeah.
If they have that much mana, it's not that hard for them to navigate a turn where they like play a Tursa with a Props in play and they've drawn that many cards and one-shot you, plus the VV damage or whatever.
It's too bad, because there's actually a lot of decks in this format that that deck would be really good against. Some slow middling decks where you just combo kill them.
But yeah, I mean, that card beats a lot of my draft decks in this format too, just by itself.
There you go.
There's a lot of really just grindy mills half decks of it. It's milling half my deck is like putting me to maybe 10 cards that late in the game, but then I just like lack sufficient ability to win the game after getting wrathed to win in 10 turns or things like that.
If you're drafting like green or whatever.
Yeah.
So then, I mean, I tried some other things to be good against Cauldron, like Clarion Conqueror is a card that's pretty good against them. So I tried Jeskai Dragons with Clarion Conquerors. This deck was too clunky, but it was kind of cool for a little bit. I've got Roiling Dragonstorm and Dragonologist to give my Clarion Conqueror hexproof.
That's cool.
That card was actually pretty good.
A development. There was like a mono red dragons deck.
Oh yeah,
with Sarkhan and literal like Torin Mauler, originally from Morningtide, but reprinted in Foundations.
Secret Standard, yeah.
But then I saw somebody cut the Torin Maulers and splash white for main deck Clarion Conquerors, which is also a 3-mana dragon.
That makes a ton of sense. Yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of cool. It doesn't. It turns off your treasure from Sarkhan, I guess, but that's probably okay.
Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. And that deck, of course, also has like Nova Hellkite and Twin Moth Stormbrood. To be clear, just a good amount of dragons.
Very aggressively slanted.
Yeah, we actually hinted at a deck like this maybe existing that moves away from the mouse package. And I think maybe the reason it was mono red, though, is it actually was doing the Sunspine Lynx thing. So maybe splashing a color makes that a lot worse. But
You
could probably get away with sideboarding the Lynxes.
Is that an important card for them? Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah. Kind of a big red thing, so you just want to hit them in big chunks of burn.
Right.
Nova Hellkite actually also I see pop up every now and then out of sideboards of Cauldron and maybe some other archetypes. It does a really unique thing, I guess, against Dimir, in that it can kill a one toughness creature and attack a Kaido for 4 for 3 mana. I think that's pretty much the main reason why it sees any play at all.
Yeah, that is pretty good. I kind of felt like when I was playing with that card in a couple decks that they didn't quite push the stats on it enough.
Yeah.
But like it needed to be a little bigger or something.
It's on my list
of attacks.
Potential sideboard one-ofs for this weekend, in fact, I guess.
That makes sense. I could see one.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, pretty nice to board in against blue-black, because it's hard for it to go too wrong.
Yeah, and maybe versus a control deck, I'll board it in, because it just attacks for a big chunk of damage. But, yeah.
Haste, yeah. Sure. Yeah. But, yeah, so for this Jeskai Dragon deck, I played it. It was so clunky that it, you know, had trouble against a wide variety of decks, so
yeah, makes sense.
It's this format's tough. I was complaining about the squeeze for standard in the last format, but there's a squeeze here too, for sure.
Yeah, now I feel like the squeezes are just generated by like the decks individually. It's not like a top end and a low end. It's just that like these decks have Into the Flood Maw to punish you for being like too clunky, but also like they play Winter Night Stories or stock up and like can grind you out some games if you're like too low to the ground.
Yeah, and one of the ways to beat Cauldron is to try to just kill everything and take complete control of the game, and then decks like that naturally struggle against things like blue black midrange, which is also just super popular, at least on ladder.
Yeah. No, so, I mean, that's like a price point thing too, right? Like, I'm really curious, this tournament I'm playing in, what percentage is actually going to be Cauldron? I think 54% at the Arena Championship is actually going to be the highest I imagine we're going to see in a for a while. Maybe I'll be proven wrong, but I think, like, I'd be kind of surprised if Cauldron passes, like, the 40% mark in a lot of these events, in paper specifically, because I just think people don't want to buy into that deck.
Yeah, especially, like, Grand Prix level events, right? It's just tough because it's actually very expensive and there's this looming fear that something could easily be banned.
Yeah. I saw Wizards almost kind of announced they aren't going to ban anything. They had a,
I saw that.
Standard article that kind of said how bad emergency bans have been for Standard previously.
LSV wrote an article on TCG Player that summed it up pretty well.
Oh, yeah.
I recommend people go read it. Basically, he thinks from their perspective, they're pretty unlikely to do anything about it.
It's such a lose-lose. Like,
yeah,
but
they're in a tough spot.
I will say, just this Arena Championship with only, like, 37 players is not a huge sample.
No.
And it's also right after rotation. So, like, at least it would be ridiculous to have taken action before this Spotlight Series in Orlando, in my opinion. That would be just completely absurd for Wizards to do. You have to let it play out in a much larger field like this
and actually see what happens. Yeah.
Because, you know, you might have a big sample size and maybe, you know, we'll see. I mean, who knows? We could end up seeing Demir having a favorable win rate against Cauldron. You know, after everything I've said, it's like I don't actually know the truth of what's happening here.
Maybe. Maybe they can find a configuration that works.
Yeah,
I kind of doubt
it. Finders. Yeah, I kind of doubt it too. But just kind of the point being is like something could pull ahead. The Cauldron actual win rate could be less severe than it seems. And to some extent, yeah, it just feels like it probably has to be a proactive deck in my mind that could take this throne away. But it's really hard for a four seam rip deck or whatever you're trying to do to battle it to actually become the best deck in the format because it's so easily kind of exploitable.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's ever not going to be Cauldron as the best deck, but maybe it can get to a place where there's still like a viable selection of decks where you don't have to ban. I would be kind of tempted just to ban and be like, oops, we missed one, to be honest.
Yeah. But I imagine it would be Cauldron, given the...
Yeah, and you can hit Cauldron and Vivi could still play and...
Let people play Prowess of Vivi, yeah.
It doesn't damage their monetary value too much, I don't think, because Cauldron, I guess it would take a hit, right? But it's already sort of on its way out, and he's played in older formats, and it...
Yeah, it is a...
it's an Eternal card for sure, and then Vivi, you know, Vivi's going to see play still, so...
Cauldron was like $30 before it really was seeing any Standard play, so I would expect it to not... You know, it's like $45 right now, but I wouldn't expect it to just fall off a cliff if it got banned, yeah.
No, it'd probably just go back to $30, honestly. Or maybe a little lower and then back up to $30, something like that.
Because, like, the modern decks that play it aren't among the best, but they are doing something really powerful, and they're built around them, so people do want three or four for those decks, and then I'm sure Commander has a ton of applications.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's a very unique Mythic, so it can only go so low.
Yeah, exactly.
Commander, that sort of thing. Let's see. Oh, just so I don't forget, there's this one other list while we're still sort of talking about control decks that I saw in a Magic Online challenge that I thought was a good idea, something I might try, where it's basically blue-white control splashing Scorching Dragonfire and Fire Magic. So, sounds kind of nice. You'd have to give up some of the colorless lands, but other than that, you're not really making your mana worse. So
yeah, it's a lot of tools versus Demir, I'm sure. I mean, the exile on Dragonclaw or on Dragonfire is relevant against the Cauldron deck a little bit too.
Yeah, it's not too bad. I mean, you don't want a ton of three damage things against them because their creatures can outsize that, but a little bit of it would definitely be okay.
Yeah, and you need more than just four Get Lost. It's like removal, I think, in your early turns.
Yeah. One of the problems with this is that blue-white control mirrors Fountain Port's really important, so you losing your color slants can be rough there, but it might just be your Arena problem. Who knows? I guess that mostly covers it, huh? Is there any more Standard decks you wanted to talk about?
Not really. Try to make an effort on probably Thursday night to share my lists that I'll play. it's probably going to be really close to the lists from JMM and the Arena Championship.
That's fine. That'd still be useful for people. I'll be curious to see it anyways. So
yeah. So yeah.
You should definitely do that. Cool. All right. Well, thanks everyone for watching. We will see you next time.
All right. I got something unique here.
Nice. Ready.
Kind of a puzzle.
Oh no.
Not that hard.
You're not going to embarrass me. Okay.
No. So we're going to start with the easy part. So this was related to, I guess, like metagames and picking a deck, but taking it to a real extreme. Mm-hmm. It actually kind of spawned in my testing Discord, and not even this conversation we're about to have, but it made me started to think about this extreme. And it's like, this hypothetical is that you're playing, let's say, we'll start with the easier one. You're playing a rock, paper, scissors tournament, and it's a weird situation where you're not just like playing a bunch of games of rock, paper, scissors and changing up each time. You have to submit either rock, paper, or scissors ahead of time and lock in that choice, and then basically play round robin against the rest of the field.
Okay.
And if you somehow got early information just for yourself that a bunch of people had already submitted rock by lot, like mm-hmm. what would you do then?
Submit paper.
Yeah. So that's pretty simple.
Yeah.
But you know, Magic isn't like that way with more decks. But then I knew about this. I think it might have actually been invented by one of the creators of the show of the Big Bang Theory. But there's like a five-way rock, paper, scissors.
Oh, yeah. I've called this
scissors, paper, lizard, Spock, which is
yeah.
effectively each of the five things has two wins and two losses and a tie against itself.
Yeah.
And it made me kind of break down. What if you got early information that two of these things were really overrepresented?
Of the five. Like Lizard and Spock.
Yeah, sure. That's a good example because it matters what pair they are. So if you learned that, you know, ahead of time, that instead of each of these being 20% of your tournament, that Lizard and Spock are each like 35% of the tournament and the other three things make up 10% each, what mm-hmm. would you pick?
So there's two that beats one and two that beats the other.
Yeah.
So you'd have to decide.
There's no one thing that beats both of Lizard and Spock.
Right. 35. How do Lizard and Spock interact? I don't even know. I guess
Lizard beats Spock.
Lizard beats Spock. I guess you just pick Lizard?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
It's like kind of interesting to think about for a second, but effectively you'll just get a bunch of wins and ties by picking the thing that's most favored. Sometimes if a pair of these things line up well, like if rock and scissors were the most popular things, then you should pick Spock because it has good matchups against two out of both the things. But I think sometimes it's like if you see two popular things and one thing beats the other, I guess is what I'm kind of addressing here. The thing that beats the other thing is probably what you should be leaning towards. Now, Magic isn't that simple, obviously, and there's not 100% win rates, but
mm-hmm.
it was kind of an interesting thought experiment I had today.
Okay, yeah, and it sort of fits with like what you would choose for a tournament.
Yeah, I was kind of breaking it down in Modern a little bit more of like you could have like aggro, mid-range, control, combo, and ramp. And kind mm-hmm. of assign a similar kind of like two wins and two losses to those. But it's way more nuanced than that. But that's of kind course, of what I was looking at.
Yeah. You can maybe make an argument that it sort of is an argument for playing the best deck or two of the best deck. Like if there's two really good decks, instead of trying to play a deck that beats both,
you play one that beats the other. Yeah.
I don't know how often something like that comes up.
Yeah, I guess it's also like an interesting comparison of like if there was a deck that beat the most two played decks, is it even that much better off than just playing one of those two best decks that is like good against the other one?
Right.
It.
Yeah. And of course, that immediately makes me think of how decks have to be able to beat. Like the inherent power level of a deck matters because they have to be able to beat things that you're not prepared for or things that aren't just the top, because unlike the Spock Lizard Rock game, there's not only five, there's like five make up most of it, but then there's a huge, there's still a large chunk of like six through 10.
And then if you like kind of dial it back more simply, and we go back to just the normal rock, paper, scissors example, it's not like actually the reality that you know that rock will be more picked. It's everybody's
right. It's just the only piece of information you have.
Yeah, but I mean
when
that like
all else is equal.
What changes if everybody learns that a bunch of people have already submitted rock?
Oh.
You know? Then it's like that's more of a leveling mind game thing.
Right. Maybe nothing.
Yeah.
On balance.
But yeah, just kind of interesting thought things I've thought about today. I do enjoy kind of taking things to extremes sometimes. This extreme, for example, is the idea of like having five decks that have 100% win rates against each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can help. It could definitely help illustrate a point. If you take something to an extreme, you realize, okay, well, some number of this is good, so, or clearly, so we just have to find that number, that sort of thing. Cool.
Yeah, and that's, I guess, a little insight to my modern testing also that I think I'll just kind of say that modern right now feels very much about being
rock,
on top
scissors.
Of it and knowing, like, yeah, not to the sense of 100% win rates, but it certainly just feels like you have, you know, recently, for example, we saw Grixis Persists Reanimator doing really well, and now we're seeing Affinity doing really well, but I think Affinity is already just getting kind of owned, and, like, it's a lot of really linear decks in Modern that I think it's keeps demonstrating the hate exists that works to actually beat them. So,
well, it's funny that that's still kind of how Modern works. I would say that it seems like that's the most common pattern for Modern over the years, even if every metagame isn't like that.
Yeah, it's just been interesting because we went from like Nadu being broken to Boros Energy feeling like it could kind of correctly out mid-range the format, and then to Breach being super broken, and then now since the Breach ban, it feels like nothing has taken that slot, but we've had almost like a year of there kind of being a clear best deck.
You know, for our video analytics, I think our Modern video has the most views out of anything.
Yeah, it's YouTube. An interesting spot. And, you know, if you listening have any feedback, we'd love to hear it. You know, Standard is the RCQ season, but also it seems like people really don't like Standard that much. So, and especially when, you know, we're making some content that is kind of saying, you know, I'm saying you should probably play Is It Cauldron at your RCQs or whatever.
Yeah, well, certainly if Standard doesn't change for the next several months, we're not going to be talking about it very much.
Yeah. And, you know, in a month from now, I'll be playing the PT, and then we can talk a lot about Modern, because I know there's some Modern RCs in October and November. So we can talk, you know, about it before then as well, but it's kind of hard for me to talk about stuff before the Pro Tour.
Yeah. I mean, and then certainly if any of our patrons want to comment about what they would like to hear, that might push us one direction or another, honestly. But of course, we still follow a little bit of a news cycle that is Magic. We're like, we're going to talk about the new set and we're going to do our sealed episode and stuff.
I'm still also planning on playing a sealed qualifier weekends.
Nice. There's an Arena Direct this weekend.
Another Arena Direct already?
Yeah.
And boosters. The qualifier weekend? Wow.
Is the qualifier weekend this weekend too?
Yeah.
I'm qualified for that.
Me too. Man, I'm playing it on my phone.
Okay. Yeah, I've worked Saturday and Sunday evening. I was going to play the Arena Direct all Friday maybe.
Yeah, the fact that there was a qualifier weekend made me think, yeah, whatever. If I go to Phoenix, maybe I just won't play Standard. I'll show up with my Modern deck on Sunday and I'll try really hard in the qualifier weekend. But the issue with that is, like, what if I just get a terrible pool and go 0-2 or whatever?
Yeah.
And, like, then I'm just there and not playing the Standard tournament. So I'm glad I got a deck ready for that event.